This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Hey everyone, it's Estet Herndon, political reporter for the New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent, I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what the New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice from the New York Times opinion section. In this episode, you'll hear what the board had to say after Andrew Yang's visit. If you haven't heard Mr. Yang's interview yet, hit pause in this episode and tune into that one first. Joining me today is Mara Gay to talk about the Yang Gang and young voters.
I'm Mara Gay, and I cover New York for the editorial board.
First, let's take a listen into what we had to say after Mr. Yang left our boardroom.
What do you guys think?
Hey, certainly in the running for the candidate, you might want to spend more time with.
Yeah, I liked his energy.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, he had amazing energy. He as you guys, I don't know if you guys saw, he was literally bouncing out the door and down the hall, which was pretty impressive.
He has little to lose. I mean, you know, he's like just having a good time and you can kind of feel it.
I'm concerned about people who are too entrenched in Washington and don't have enough of a vision. And I'm also concerned about people like Andrew Yang and Tom Steyer, who really just don't seem to have any conception of how Washington works and what sorts of barriers they're going to face and what solutions they would have when they run up against them. And I don't know which is the bigger devil there, but it's a real problem with people like this who have no government experience.
He's a real clear thinker, though. Mm-hmm.
I think he's a clear thinker, too. And also, I thought the earmarks answer was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that showed a great understanding of how it works, quite honestly.
Not of how it works, but of what you're actually going to face when you're in Washington in terms of the cross currents. Yeah.
The polarization, you mean?
Polarization and just the sclerotic nature of Washington.
Also, his portrait of the fundamental economic problems was more moving than Bernie's, and Bernie has been selling this for 30 years. I mean, he really seemed to have an almost emotional sense of what people have been going through and what the problems are.
I definitely got the sense that he, especially compared to Steyer, has more of an understanding of like what the average person is dealing with, because with Steyer it felt very much like just throw money at the problem, and he didn't really connect, for me anyway, in terms of like, you know, like I feel like Yang really understood it a lot more just on a basic like emotional level, and that's what voters are going to care about most, is like the emotional resonance.
I felt as though, like, one of the questions coming into this meeting in my mind, maybe someone in this room actually said this, is like, shouldn't this person be in charge of like a major government agency on technology?
Like a secretary level position. Like,
yeah,
secretary,
exactly. A cabinet level position on technology. I mean, I'm wary of adding any cabinet level positions.
It's just hard to get around the sense that this guy should be running for like New York City Council. And I think he's right that business and government are different, and he should go learn how to be in government if that's his aspiration.
I guess I just fundamentally conceive of the role of being an executive in government as something that requires a particular set of skills that a person needs to demonstrate that they have, and that success in business doesn't do it. It's actually life in government that prepares you for that. And I mean, I take your point about ideas, but I think there's a difference between where those ideas come from and who's going to be most successful in implementing them. If you think that UBI is an interesting idea, and I tend to have a lot of misgivings about it, demonstrate it, you know? Run for New York mayor, implement it here. If it works, then take it to the country. But why start
at the national level.
But Binya's point is a good one, and but I would add to it just there's a sense that we all get about somebody's sort of civic and moral seriousness as they approach right. these questions that really does resonate or not. And I think Barack Obama really, he exuded that seriousness, and I think that was why Americans gave him a break on these questions that obviously he had never had to deal with firsthand, American soldiers' lives, for instance. And I think that's something we ask about all these people. And I found him to be morally serious. I found his 3-part test on when to intervene militarily. I mean, I think I'm sure people would quibble with the details, but I thought it evinced a sort of seriousness that I want to see from a leader.
So, Mara, what did you think of Andrew Yang's visit?
I was totally taken aback by him. I came in skeptical just because of universal basic income. It's not my favorite idea. I think it's pretty regressive, actually. But I was expecting a tech bro, to be honest. And I met someone who had deeply thought through issues, I think brought a level of compassion and intelligence to the campaign that I just wasn't expecting. And of course, his energy is just awesome.
Yeah, he has such great energy. My favorite moment of the Yang interview was, we're obviously all New Yorkers. And he, as we were walking into the room, he was asking me just like where my kids go to school. And he made it very personal very quickly and found an intimacy that I didn't really feel with a lot of the other candidates.
Yeah, I mean, these are human beings, and it's good to remember that. And it's good to look someone in the eye and be able to size them up that way, too.
I also loved the way he talked about his new notoriety and running into people on the subway.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was great, kind of just talking about how suddenly people are recognizing him.
And then there's this uncomfortable period in the subway car after you've taken the pictures with him. You're still sitting there. And so then they're like, where are you going? Or how's Bernie? Or whatever the heck questions are. And so
he also took a city bike to his endorsement interview, I believe.
No, it was his own bike.
Oh, it was his own bike. It was his own bike.
Yeah, he had some helmet hair when he arrived.
I love it. Even better.
More from our deliberations after a quick break.
This podcast is supported by Tenderfoot TV. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where the new podcast To Die For begins. Hosted by Neil Strauss, To Die For takes listeners inside the dark and dangerous world of Russian sex espionage, where targets are seduced for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, the producers of To Live and Die in LA, binge To Die For now on all podcast platforms.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice. What kind of voter does Yang excite, do you think?
Well, I think young voters are probably the most drawn to his candidacy, but also voters, I think, who maybe don't usually show up to the polls. I think, Andrew Yang, for me, reminds me of the kind of candidate that I hear a lot of voters yearn for. They say, well, why don't interesting people run for office, right? Why can't we get younger people from different walks of life to run? And he is kind of that guy. I mean, I think we were both surprised by him, right?
Yeah, I was definitely. One of the things that really surprised me was just it was very clear how many people he's talked to, by which I mean he's been on the trail. He's been in communities talking to voters and really listening to them. And I wasn't expecting that. He's really done his homework. Yeah.
And you said that, I think in the deliberations, you actually mentioned that you'd seen him on the trail and that the Yang gang was pretty dedicated and enthusiastic.
Oh, my God. He's a rock star. they flock to him. So, he's one of three candidates in this huge primary under the age of 50 but many of the frontliners are boomers over 70. What role do you think age is playing in the field in 2020?
Well, you can't meet Yang and not think about his energy. But at the same time, the fact remains that a lot of young voters are super excited about Bernie Sanders. Right. And the senator is, I believe, the oldest candidate in the race.
Yeah, he'll be 79 when he takes office, if he's elected.
Okay. So I think that just alone goes to show you that it's demographics don't function necessarily the way that you would think they would in a campaign. I mean, and similarly, black voters are still extremely drawn to Joe Biden. So I think that, it's not just the age of the candidate. It's the ideas that the person is putting forth.
The board likes to debate the idea of an upper age limit on presidential candidates in addition to the lower one set at 35. What do you think of that idea?
Oof. it's a hard one because I think that we're in a position right now, especially where you really just do want the best candidate to win. But when you look at judges and you think about the time that they're going to be on the bench, sometimes you get a terrible judge who's there for decades and decades. Other times you have someone on the bench who could do a lot of good but is too old to be there for too long. So it is responsible, I think, to think about the age of the candidates. One thing that I asked one of the candidates was, what's your exercise routine? And I think, they do have a responsibility to explain to the American people, how they intend to stick around.
Taking care of themselves, right?
How they're taking care of themselves. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
Particularly with the older candidates, it puts an onus on them to find a running mate who could step into the job right away. And I actually think, obviously, that's true of any vice presidential candidate. But, particularly for the ones like Bernie and Joe Biden, who have had health issues already throughout their lives, honestly, it makes it even more pressing that they find the right VP.
I agree with that.
I have to say, just as an interview, I found his youth and exuberance to be encouraging, and maybe that's just sort of the order that we've done it in, but it just resonates really differently to hear these sort of political ideas coming from somebody who's frankly just younger. Yeah.
But he does give you the sense that his vision for what's wrong and how to fix it is more modern.
And he gives you the sense that he's actually
more modern
in touch
and more
with,
modest.
Well, that he's also in touch with sort of the anxiety of people under 40.
Yeah, exactly.
Regarding everything.
He gets it better than some of the older candidates.
I think one of the things about Yang, and I don't know that this is actually directly linked to his age, a lot of his solutions are to 21st century challenges, as opposed to a lot of the other candidates. We just kind of see the same prescriptions being recycled from past elections.
Totally. I think Andrew Yang is the least out of touch, it feels, of all of the candidates.
Yeah.
He kind of knows the cost of milk. He knows what an app is on a phone, and you believe him when he says, when he talks about them and how to use them. I think he understands the world that younger people, millennials, Zoomers, are living in. And that's appealing, and it's infectious.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I felt like with his tech answers, big tech answers, that I felt more confident on other things than his way that he would deal with Silicon Valley. Like, he's supposed to be the internet guy, and I just feel like there's this, like, kind of optimism or like sort of maybe misunderstanding of like the power that they have, and maybe that's because he's kind of friendly with them. It doesn't seem like as much of a force, but it just sort of seems like, I mean, if you don't go after big tech and you're the candidate who wins, I mean, I don't understand. They're just going to push you around.
He sells himself as the internet guy, but he doesn't seem to totally understand the power that tech companies hold. And I worry maybe he's too close to it.
I agree. It also gave me pause because the way Andrew Yang talks about technology and big tech, it really, that was kind of the tech bro aspect that I was expecting. And it's not, he doesn't talk about it the way a politician talks about power. And I do think it might show a lack of understanding in a broader sense about what the role of president is, because really you're talking about how to use power for good, hopefully. And, you know, I would like to hear him talk about regulation. I want to hear him talk about companies in general. I think he seems to think about tech more as a social concept than a industry. And it's both. It's not just one.
So, Mara, we invited Michael Bloomberg to come for an endorsement interview. He turned us down. He said he hadn't come up with enough positions yet on various topics to sit down with the editorial board. Obviously, we know him well. The board has endorsed him twice for mayor. You covered Michael Bloomberg. Can you give us a little bit of sense of how the former mayor compares to Andrew Yang?
Well, the fact that he declined our invitation just kind of made me chuckle, because this is a man who changed the rules to run for a third term. So I just kind of laughed to myself and I thought, oh, I'm a billionaire. Change the rules for me. But, you know, they may appear to be vastly different creatures, but actually they're both outsiders. And there's a lot of appeal there. They have big ideas, even if I don't agree with all of their ideas. And there's something deeply refreshing about that. I mean, one of the things that people do love about Michael Bloomberg, even when they can't stand him, is that they just respect that he has ideas that don't come from the political establishment, and that he does what he thinks is right, because he can't be bought off. And you know, it's not some lobbying firm that came up with the idea, it's him. And I think Andrew Yang has that quality as well. They may appeal to quite different sets of people or not. We'll see. But I think there's something refreshing about that.
I thought one of the more interesting parts of the Yang interview was when he laid out and recognized the fact that business is different than government, and being good at running a business isn't the same as being good at running a government.
That's something that Bloomberg does not have, which is a self-awareness to understand that, yes, I may have a background in business, but actually this requires a different skill set. And there are other skill sets that are important as well. And I thought that Andrew Yang displayed a humility that was quite disarming, I think. I mean, that was the biggest difference between him and all of the candidates, to be honest. I just thought this guy came in to sell his ideas, to pitch us in this way where he was not entitled at all. And gosh, I mean, that's not something you see.
It was incredibly refreshing.
It was. I mean, and that's ego and politics are kind of twins. Ego and politics are twins, and so they go together. And so when you find somebody like Andrew Yang, it's worth taking a second look.
What do you think of the idea of Andrew Yang running for mayor of New York?
I love it. Come join the party. That's what I say. The more the merrier. We have a open seat coming up in 2021. And I think that Andrew Yang's energy would be a great addition to a race that hasn't quite shaped up yet.
Thanks, Mara.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for Andrew Yang. Tomorrow, Elizabeth Warren is up. Thanks for listening.
The Choice is produced by At Will Media. Mitch Bluestein, Molly Socha, Ashley Taylor, and Rachel Leitner, with help from Michelle Mason. Mixing by Lauren Gardner and original music by Allison Leighton Brown. Special thanks to Tyson Evans from The New York Times. Our executive producers are Will Malnati from At Will Media and Phoebe Lett from The New York Times. Finally, we want to hear from you. Please rate and review us on the Apple Podcasts app. It'll help more voters find the show.